Well, here we are in Vayeshev, and the truth is that saying a shir on Vayeshev in this format on the website creates a little bit of a difficulty for me. On the one hand, I don't want these shiurim to be a plug for the books which I've written. On the other hand, it's true that the subject of Yosef, I have this book, The Riddle of the Bowing Moon, and it's available on the website, but please don't think this is an advertisement. But the fact is that there are so many aspects of the Yosef story which could be dealt with, which should be dealt with, that I can't help mentioning the book. In fact, when I was planning this year, I thought I would devote it to discussing the first of Yosef's dreams. And then suddenly I remembered that on the website I had put that chapter as a sample chapter for people to see if they're interested in the book. So that's already sitting on my website, that first shir. So people who might be interested could have a look over there. So I want to talk about the second dream and really come to the question. I mentioned the title of the book before, The Mystery of the Bowing Moon. And that, of course, is the question of who exactly is the moon. In the second dream, Yosef has the Shemesh and the Yoreach and Achad, Oso Kochavim, Mishkachavim Li, the sun, the moon, and 11 stars. And who is the moon? Rochel, his mother, which is the most, likely candidate, had already died at the time. So what did this dream portend? That is really the basis of the title of the book, The Riddle of the Bowing Moon. Now, I devote this shir to telling you a little bit what I believe is the answer to that question, or is a possible answer to that question. We can start at the beginning, and that is this. There's a posuk in Tehillim, which is a very, very interesting posuk. In fact, the truth is that when I decided to write the book, I was sort of propelled into that decision by this posuk in Tehillim, which I happened to come across. The Tehillim is in 77, Ayin Zayin, posuk Tet Zayin. And what does it say over there? Go'alto bizroya amcha, you, Rebbein Yisraelim, have redeemed your people with power, with strength, the zroya, your arm. B'nei Yaakov v'yosef selo. And who is your amcha? Who is your people? The children of Yaakov and Yosef. Now, that's a very, very rare formulation. I don't even know whether it occurs anywhere else. Like, why are we the children of Yosef? We're the children of Yaakov. Yosef is only one of the Shvatim, or two of the Shvatim, depending on how we look on Ephraim and Manasseh. But he's only a part of the Shiftei Kor. We are not the sons of Reuven, we're not the sons of Shimon, unless we come from Shevet Reuven and Shevet Shimon. So why are we the sons of Yosef? And why is the Geula, the ultimate Geula, which the Meshoire is singing about over here, somehow through Yaakov and Yosef? The Medrash reads like this, Omar Le'akadosh Baruch Hu Le'Yosef. Rabbi Nishan said to Yosef, Yosef, Kishiyigalu Yisroel Geulas Olamim, when the final Geula will come about, Vizchus Yaakov uvizchusra heim nigolem. The schus will come in the schus of Yaakov and in your schus. So suddenly, the story of Yosef, Vayeshev, we could say really, is a Yosef story. So suddenly it takes on enormous significance. It turns out that our whole Geula, the Geula Acharoina, when Mashiach and Yetz Hashem comes, suddenly we find ourselves not being redeemed as the children of Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov only, but suddenly we are redeemed also in the schus of Yosef. Now that puts Yosef into an entirely new context, which from simply reading the stories in the Torah, reading Vayeshev, Miketz, Vayigash, Vayichi, we don't see that. We see Yosef acting on the stage of history during his lifetime, but we don't see anywhere until Tehillim was Megala that to us, that Yosef is very, very much a presence in our Golus, because the ultimate Geula will come in his merit. Now, how are we to understand that? So what we have to assume, and there are plenty of mekayros to make that a justifiable assumption, is that Yosef, with his experiences in Mitzrayim, was also partaking ki'ilu of the klal of ma'aseh ovos simon lebonim, that what happened to the ovos, although strictly speaking the Chazal Gemara says that ein ovos elo shlosho, you only have Avraham, Yitzchak and Yaakov being our ovos, but Yosef is also a partial av, witness the fact that he was the father of two Shvatim, Ephraim and Menashe. So with him it's perhaps also possible to apply the klal of ma'aseh ovos simon lebonim, and that Yosef's experiences in Mitzrayim presaged the experiences which we as Klal Yisrael will have in our, and are having in our Golos. Now, of course, the central point in Yaakov's experience, in Yosef's experience, was obviously the terrible nisoyon which he had with the Eishes Potiphar, that of Yovel Besoy la'asos melachto. Chazal say that he even had a havamina, that he would be mezane with her after all her importunings, and in the end it was the Dukna Shel Yaakov which saved him. But the nekuda is that what Yosef accomplished with that kvishas hayetzer, with that heroic resistance to his whole being, which wanted very, very much, after all these importunings, he wanted to be mezane with her, and the fact that he was able to control himself and not to do it, that was kaveya, our ability in our golos to withstand all the blandishments which the golos threw at us or is throwing at us. The truth is, of course, in that sense, we in Golos America are much more exposed to all those blandishments, and there weren't many blandishments in Poland and in Rachmon al-Islam, the terrible the tzoros which Yidden had. But here in America we are living a free life and everything is really available to us, and the ability of Klal Yisrael as a Klal Yisrael, I guess individuals are sometimes nifshal, but that we as a people are managing to maintain our Kedushas Yisrael in the matzav where there's so much out there waiting to attract us and to sort of trap us into its wilds. Where did we find that strength? Where did we get the strength? That we got it from Yosef HaTzadik. And in that sense, it makes sense to say that v'gula achroino k'shiyigalu Yisroel g'ula elomis b'schus Yaakov v'schuscha heim nig'olem. Not only in the schus of Yaakov, who also was the Av, who was able to maintain his integrity in Golos, in the 20 years that he was in Golos by Lovan, and he was able, im Lovan garti, v'tariyak mitzvot shamati. So Yaakov is the Av, who is the protective Av of us in Golos. So Yosef also managed to do that. We can even define that a little more closely, that Yaakov in his Golos had to struggle with the Yetzer Hara of money, of wealth, because that was his nutslos. When Lovan finally caught up with him, he said, look, I was living with you and I was the shomer of your sheep and I didn't sleep at night and the heat didn't bother me and the cold didn't bother me, that if an animal died I paid out of it of my own money. That was his nisoyon. Lovan was the biggest swindler that the world has ever produced, and Yaakov managed to maintain his midas ha'emes in Lovan's golos. So we could say that it was Yaakov's chus that we have managed to maintain our honesty and our integrity even in golos. The nisyonos are very big. Again, one imagines that individuals sometimes were nichshel in being less than totally honest. But that Klal Yisrael, as a Klal, are tayre tmimes deke yidden, who keep their honesty, who keep their ehrlichkeit, that is the schus of Yaakov Avinu. Yosef's nisoyon was the nisoyon of znus, and that was through the Eishes Potiphar, and that he was able to maintain his integrity and not be nichshel, that was his contribution. So Yaakov and Yosef together guaranteed that when the Ribbono Shel'olam will finally send Mashiach, there'll be a Klal Yisrael to whom he can come. There'll be a Klal Yisrael who is honest, and there'll be a Klal Yisrael who is pure. And that honesty and that purity is the source of Yaakov and Yosef. Remember the Chazal, Achasi Upesuma Kosov over there in the end of Emma by the Mekalel. That's a Moivet Gezach, that Klal Yisrael in Mitzrayim, when we imagine what went over here in America during the periods of the slavery, and we were slaves in Mitzrayim, and Achasi Upesuma Kosov, there was only one Mises Nus Shoigeg. It was night, she couldn't see, whatever the story was. It's unbelievable. That is Yosef's source. And therefore, when we learn the Parshas of Yosef, when we learn in Vayeshev what the beginnings of Yosef were, what the experiences of Yosef were, so we have to have in the back of our mind, and nowadays when we're mamish in the Ikvas of the Meshicha, in the front of our minds, that Yosef and the story which happened with Yosef have to do with the Yosef who will ultimately in Acharis HaYomim be the soul, the conscience of Judaism, which is able to guarantee that when Mashiach comes, Erod Haben Wutz again, he'll be there, we will be there to welcome him. Now, against that background, if we think a little bit about the second dream, there are lots of differences between the first dream and the second dream when we really think about it. And the truth is that we must assume the significance of those differences for the simple reason because we have to ask ourselves, why did we need two dreams? Later on, by Paro's dream, he had the dream about the cows and the dream about the stalks, and so Yosef, when he interpreted the dream, he had to also offer an interpretation to the fact that there were two dreams. So the dream, which is repeated twice, it needs an explanation. So Yosef gave an explanation to Pharaoh why his dream was twice. But over here, nobody seems to make an issue out of it. Why twice the dream? Although on a superficial level we would say that the dreams are very similar to one another. In both cases, somebody is bowing to Yosef. In the one case, the brothers. In the second case, the Shemesh and the Oreach and the Achad Osa Koychavim. So they're really two bowing dreams, as it were. But so why do we need two? So it must be that the differences between them are significant enough that they are talking about two different things. Now, the best way to be masbir that would be to first diagnose the first dream and then the second dream, but that would really take us much too far, much too long. And as I say, the analysis which I tried to come to an understanding of the first dream, it's really on the website, the sample chapter on that book of bowing, the riddle of the bowing moon. But even without looking at anything in very big detail, we know that there are differences between the two dreams. I'll just mention some of them. For example, right, the first dream has a background. Hine anachnu ma'almim alumim b'soich ha'sadeh. All of us brothers were together in the field and we were tying sheaves. So something is happening. We were in the dream, we were in the field, and we were busy binding sheaves, and I had bound one particular sheaf, and wow, suddenly it got up, and whatever happened, happened. So there is a context within which the bowing took place. Over here in the second dream, nothing. Where is this? Where, what, how, where were you? It's not so easy to picture the Shemesh, Yoreach, and Koychovim bowing down to Yosef. Like here, everybody was in the field, so they were binding sheaves, and then the sheaf of Yosef got up, and others gathered around. We know the story. So where was Yosef over here? Where is he standing? Where are they suddenly bowing? And how can the sun and the moon up in the sky bow down to Yosef here on the ground? Did the moon and the sun come down? Did Yosef rise up? And the truth is that what does it really mean that they were bowing down? This is sort of a finicky kind of question, but the truth is, have you ever tried to figure out how a sphere bows? I can figure in my mind, once you accept the anthropomorphism, I can understand that a sheaf stands on the ground and it sort of bends over, so that looks like bowing down. I can understand that. I don't know how a sphere bows down. It's round, so it's just rolling around. In what way is it bowing? The truth is that it's a technical issue which needs some kind of an answer. I am inclined to think that bowing down over here doesn't mean literally bow down, but it means a sort of subjugating oneself. In other words, instead of dealing with the bowing down as an actual physical bowing, maybe it's used over here in the sense of subjugation. The Shemesh, Yorech, and Achad Kochovim bowed down to me in the sense that they admitted their subordination to me. That's the word I was thinking of before. They admit their subordination. But let's even assume that there's a physical bowing, which at least I can't figure out exactly how it looked and what really happened. And as I say, who, where, what, they weren't together. So where did they bow? Did they bow from up there and he was down here? Where did he see them bow? The technicalities are difficult for me to imagine. But then you have the question, another question, as an example. He told this dream to Yaakov. Now, the first dream he didn't tell to Yaakov. So why didn't he tell the first dream to Yaakov? After all, the first dream obviously symbolized the food situation when the Yidden came to Mitzrayim and Yosef was the melech to whom they all had to bow down in order to get their food. Well, where was Yaakov? Yaakov also needed to eat. So why wasn't he interested in that dream? Like, why isn't he a part of it? So it's possible to say that Yosef couldn't have dreamt such a dream altogether, that Yaakov should bow down to him, Chalil. Yaakov, he should bow down to Yosef. So a dream has to have some kind of achiza in a person's mind. I don't know what the real answer is, why Yaakov is not mentioned. But over here, he is mentioned, and, well, you could say that he mentions Yaakov because Yaakov is mentioned in the dream, so the dream concerns him. But that's also not so poshut, because then why didn't he tell it to whoever the Imah is? Well, it can't be Rochel, is it Leah, is it Bila, but there is somebody who's pictured by the moon. So if the vort is that I tell the dream to everybody who is involved in the dream, well, there was somebody who was also involved in the dream, but he didn't tell it to them. He told it to his father and he told it to his brothers. So somehow Yaakov seems to be involved over here more so than in the earlier dream, and that's why he has to be told about the dream. The mother, I guess, would be whoever the mother is. We'll see about that in a moment, but she will be subordinate to Yaakov. Yaakov is the Av, sof kol sof. So the second dream has some elements to it which make it very different to the first dream. It seems to me that in the Pshuto Shel Mikra, and just laying the whole Parshias together, the thought which went through my mind, now I don't have anybody who says that, so it's my own idea and it may not be right, so please see a yellow flashing light over here. I'll tell you what I think. I don't know whether it's the Emes, but it seems to me that there's no problem over here of two dreams, that means the dream being repeated, that we should need an explanation. Why should the same dream be dreamt over twice with the same content? So the answer is because it's not the same. And the truth is that the second dream perhaps has absolutely nothing to do with the first dream. The first dream presaged the story of Mitzrayim, that they came down for food. We're dealing with sheaves, we're dealing with wheat, we're dealing with eating, and that is obviously what was involved. And it could be that Yaakov only came down after the brothers had already, Yosef had revealed himself to the brothers, so Yaakov doesn't belong in that dream. They're tirutzim. But one thing is clear, that the dream refers to the story as it happened in Mitzrayim. Now, the second dream, I would say, does not refer to that at all. And in fact, my contention is, what I want to suggest is, that the second dream refers to Aches HaYomim. That means that at that time, Klal Yisrael is not described as a sheaf of corn in the middle of a field. It's described as heavenly bodies, heavenly lighting bodies, lighting up the world. The Shemesh, the Oreach, the Kochavim. That will be a time that we will be Le'or Goyim. That this will be the Geula. We'll be back. We'll be what we really want to be, what we really ought to be, what Golos has stopped us from being. Like, imagine Klal Yisrael and Aches HaYomim. It's a beautiful sun. It's a gorgeous moon. It's the Achad Osa Kochavim. It's all there, and it's shining, and it's bright, and it's beautiful, and it's good. And they are mishtachave. What does it mean that they are mishtachave? They are mishtachave to Yosef. Oh, I forgot to tell the Iker one of the other differences, which is very significant. I didn't mention it before. But there's another big difference between the two dreams. Because in the first dream, Yosef does not appear as Yosef. Yosef appears as a sheaf. Where is Yosef? Yosef is with other brothers. So Yosef doesn't have to be represented by anybody because he's there. He's in the field. They're all binding sheaves together. What happened with over here? So a sheaf got up. It wasn't a sheaf standing for Yosef. It was a sheaf because he was the bread giver. He was the one who was in charge of the food in Mitzrayim. So that's his sheaf. That's Mr. Food is in the center. And those people who need the food are bowing down. So the sheaves were not representative of Yosef the person. In the second dream, Yosef the person is involved. Hinei HaShemesh vayoreach v'achad osa kechavim mishtachavim li. Yosef is there. Yosef is standing. Yosef the man. And they're not bowing down like the sheaves bowing down to the sheaf. It's the Shemesh, Yoreach, and the kechavim mishtachavim to Yosef. So I think that perhaps that is shtachavoya, that subordination, that subjugation, derives from the yashakoyach, the thank you, which Yaakov, and now since we're talking in Aches HaYomim, the moon can be Rochel again. Yaakov and Rochel. Rochel is the one who worried about us when we went into Golos. Rochel mevakar alboneo, mea noelis linochem aloveo, alboneo. She is worrying about us in Golos. In Aches HaYomim, when finally the Geula will have come, so the Shemesh, that's Yaakov Avinu, the Oreach, the Mama Rochel, and the Achad Osa Kechovim, Mishtachovim Li to Yosef, what are they saying to Yosef? What are they saying? Yosef, we owe you everything. Without you, we wouldn't have been able to experience this day at all. There wouldn't have been a Shemesh, there wouldn't have been a Yoreach, there wouldn't have been an Achad Osa Kechovim, because we would have all been lost in the filth and schmutz of the Golos, where we had to live out these 2,000 years. That is what that Medrash said. Kishigalu Yisrael Geulas Olamim b'shus Yaakov u'b'shus Chohem Nigolim. Shneimar Goalta b'Yisrael Amcho b'nei Yaakov v'Yosef. So that's my suggestion. My suggestion is that the second dream is not a repetition of the first dream, but that the first dream is about the story in Mitzrayim, about the famine and about the food, and the second dream is about the Geula Acharoinu. And just to finish off this here, I hope you found it interesting. I find it very interesting because it's these are stories. You know, the whole learning of Vayeshev in this context, this is what we all remember from childhood. Which kindergarten teacher doesn't sort of breathe a sigh of relief when Vayeshev rolls around and she can tell the story of Yaakov and Yosef and the brothers? So we learn it as children. So this is a Mishana de Gemoshel. We're simply learning Pshuta Shel Mikra in the Pasha enables us to get some very, very unchildlike maskonas, some understandings which perhaps as children, and certainly as children, escaped us. So just to finish this off, I had this enormous ha'ora, and it's a very important ha'ora. I didn't see anybody ask it again. When I say these things over, I can't say that they're true because I didn't see them in a sefer. But that's what it makes sense to me. In the Zois HaBrocha, where Moshe Rabbeinu gives the brochas, so when he talks about about Yosef. Yeah. So what does he say? That all this comes to Yosef because of the will of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Who is the Ribbono Shel Olam? Shoichni Sne, the one who dwells in the thorn bush. Now, we know that the Ribbono Shel Olam dwelt in the thorn bush when Moshe Rabbeinu had his vision. So he was Madua Lo Yirasne. That's what, so it's absolutely 100% true. But there's nowhere else in the Torah where the Ribbono Shel Olam is described as a Shoichni Sne. Why call the Ribbono Shel Olam a Shoichni Sne? And where does the Torah use the word? Where did Moshe Rabbeinu use the term Shoichni Sne? Dafke legabi Yosef. Legabi Yosef, it says Uretzayin Shoichni Sne. Why? Why call the Ribbono Shel Olam Shoichni Sne? Dafke in Yosef's bracha. Tell it this, the way we've been explaining things comes out very, very good. Because what Shoichni Sne? Rashi brings Imo Yanochi Batzora. It's very uncomfortable to be in a thorn bush. And what's the Ribbono Shel Olam doing in a thorn bush? Because Imo Yanochi Batzora. Because the Ribbono Shel Olam is with us in our tzoros. So who recognizes the Ribbono Shel Olam as being with us in Golos? As being with us in Golos? Imo Yanochi Batzora. That's Yosef. Because Yosef was also Imenu Batzora. Yosef is also with us, Batzora. He's right in there looking after us, that we should maintain our Targa, we should maintain our Kedusha. So Yosef, of all the people in the Chumash, who is the one who knows best the Ribbono Shel Olam as Shoich Nisne? That is Yosef HaTzadik. So if you listen to the Shir, and if you were interested, maybe this will stimulate you to learn the whole Parsha a little bit more beyond. And finally, to make a plug for the book, there is a lot of material in this Riddle of the Bowing Moon, and it's available on the website if you're interested. But that's not the reason why you should learn this Parsha, but simply because these are the Yesoides of Yahadus, which are in this deceptively simple Parsha, and we all, as good Jews, ought to know more about it.